A good Erev Shabbos, everyone. Begin by thanking. First of all, L'chaim. We'll do something a little bit different tonight. L'Kavod Purim. I should be feeling good. Can I just have one of those? Thank you. So we'll say begin by thanking our sponsors for tonight's shiur. To thank for us tonight's share. Ezra Gordon, in honor of the architect of his grandfather, Kalman Ben Meyer. Yeretz Hashem. Josh Friedman, in honor of his incredible wife, who constantly pushes him upward while successfully juggling the million silent details that surround life, their kids, their family needs, and everything else. Sounds like he's definitely in trouble for something. Okay, good. Good. Hopefully his wife is listening to the shiur and the dedication. And he's also not here, which makes me a little bit worried. Okay, all right, good. And Adam Edelman, Le'iloi Nishmas, his grandfather Marvin Edelman, whose yard site is this week. What's the name?
Mordechai Ben Chana.
Meretz Hashem. And in honor of Dan Edelman's birthday, Mazel Tov. What number?
65, thank God.
65, Kenai Nahar. Meretz Hashem, Esim Shanim Tova. So I was saying. The brothers. You know the brothers? No, Dr. Edelman is not a brother. Dr. Edelman is the father, right? He looks great, but he's the father. I want to say thank you, Ashkar, to all of our sponsors, Ashkar, to Steve Golaskov, for taking care of all of the logistics, coordination, the ordering of the food, even though he's in a faraway land of New York. A great schuss. So tonight, Emirat Hashem, we're going to do something just a little bit different. Also to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors. I often forget to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors, by the Chassidus Chabura as well, but our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Adar Haba'alim Latova, which is Benjamin and Elise Wall of Eretz Yisrael, who are proud to support the incredible worldwide work that the SOTC family does on behalf of the Jewish people. So beautiful, so incredible. So tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to take not a break. Chassidim, we never take a break from the Piyashatzna. We're just going to go on a little bit of a detour. And what I'd like to be able to do is, this is our shir before Purim. And then Emir Tzashem, you know, after Purim, hopefully Kidar Kina B'Kodesh, what we're going to do is we're going to delve into the... It's incredible to think, by the way, that we have to switch over to Pesach already. It's wild. But Emir Tzashem, after Purim, we switch over to doing the Haggadah of the Piyajetzna, which we started a couple of years ago, and Emir Tzashem, we will start. So tonight, I wanted to just spend a little bit of time focusing on Purim. So we're gonna take leave of one Rebbe just for the night, and Emir Tzashem, attach ourselves to a different Rebbe. So tonight we're going to learn the Torah of the Kedusha Slevi, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. So Rav Levi Yitzchak was one of the great Hasidic luminaries who lives in the early 1700s. The Rebbe was known for many things, but amongst his primary quality was his Avas Yisrael, a tremendous love of every single Jew, and an ability to see the good in every single Jew, to really see the good in every Jew. I will say, no, it's not so difficult to learn Shas. It's really not, especially like in the days in which we live. It's really not difficult to learn Shas, right? It takes time, but it's not difficult. It's not difficult, Baruch Hashem. Whatever language you want it in, whatever delivery mechanism you want it in, right? You could go ahead and you could finish everything. The hardest thing is not mastery of Torah. The hardest thing is Avas Yisrael, to love Jews, and not just to love Jews like you, but to love all Jews. We spoke about this a little bit this morning. That is the hardest avoda in the entire world. And throughout our history, there have been certain people who have become the paradigmatic example of Avas Yisrael. And Levi Yitzchak was amongst them. Levi Yitzchak was able to see the good in every single Jew, even the greatest sinner, even the person who the rest of society, you know, wrote off. The Rebbe was always able to see the good. As a result, Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev is known as the Sanigoren Shel Yisrael. He's known as the defender of the Jewish people. There are many stories, where in the Beis Din Shlomo, the celestial court, they are ready to hand down a terrible decree against the Jewish people. And who did HaKadosh Baruch Hu call on to defend Klal Yisrael before the celestial court of Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. Levi Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha. That's the Rebbe's name, his mother's name, Sarah Sasha. And even just saying the name of the tzaddik, even just saying his name, Levi Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha, is a tremendous source of geula, a tremendous source of salvation. A person is in trouble, they should invoke the schos of Levi Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha. A person wants to work on their avas yisrael, the love of every Jew, Levi Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha. The Rebbe was someone, and the Rebbe had a very difficult side. Just tell you, just lower the heat here for a second. So I'll just tell you a story. You know, sometimes tzaddikim become great when they're dead, but often during their lifetime, they're really badly mistreated. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was a good example of that. Moshe Rabbeinu was so poorly treated by our ancestors, so poorly treated. After he died, everybody gave a lot of respect. You know, so you got this often. You know, you go to a levaya, and what happens? You go to a funeral. What happens when they take the mace out? What does everybody do? Everybody stands up. You know, it's incredible. Like, we're so good at giving respect to the dead. Meanwhile, that same guy was alive. Everybody mistreated him, spoke negatively about him. Now that he's dead, everybody stands up. Because, you know, when you're alive, you're a Jew. When you're dead, you're Judaica. You know, so everybody, you know, always treats Judaica with a lot of cover, like a lot of derech eretz. So ultimately, again, this idea over here, that you know, the Rebbe himself was really profoundly mistreated over the course of his life. So just to tell you, Levi Yitzchak was the Rav in a city called Pinsk. Pinsk was not a Hasidic community. So I was worried about you. I said after that sponsorship, you must have done something really wrong. Really wrong, right? I'm sure. Right? So Levi Yitzchak was a Rav in the city of Pinsk. Pinsk was not a Hasidic town. It was a Misnadish town. So actually, listen to this. So the residents were very antagonistic to Levi Yitzchak. So the story is told that one time Levi Yitzchak went away for Shabbos, and he came back. Right, he was away for Shabbos, and the townspeople said, oh, finally it's our opportunity to get rid of the Rav. So what did they do? Get ready for this. A bunch of townspeople came to his house. They packed up all of his belongings. They put the Rebbe's belongings and his family on a wagon filled with manure and escorted them out to the outskirts of town. So Rebbe Yisrael comes back home. and his house is packed up. His family's packed up, sitting on a very smelly wagon. Oh, this is Rebbe Yisrael. So just pointing out, like, sometimes we think like that great people just had easy lives. Sometimes the greater the person, the greater the nisyonos. But also, after everything that Rav Levi Yitzchak went through, to be an oyev Yisrael, when people treat you well, is one thing. But to have tremendous love of your fellow Jew, even when they really mistreat you, even when they're not good to you, even when they're just downright just nasty and mean, that's a feat of tremendous spiritual heroism. And that was Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. Levi Yitzchak ben Sarah Sasha, Zuchus Yagirna. So with that, I want to share with you a beautiful idea, one or two, depending on how much time we have in Eretz Hashem. So the Rebbe's two pieces on Purim. So actually, we're going to look at the first two pieces. The first actually piece that we're going to focus on tonight is actually a piece regarding Parsha Zachar. So remember again, on the Shabbos before Purim, we have the custom to read the section of the war with Amalek. And the reason we read that section on the Shabbos before Purim is because the Mesorah tells us that Haman was a descendant of Amalek. So Amalek was the first nation to start up with us when we left Mitzrayim, and Amalek has been a thorn in our side, you know, throughout the ages. Haman was just another manifestation of Amalek. So the Rebbe says something very beautiful. So we'll say, take a look. So again, if you're following along on the sheet, it's paragraph A on the sheet. So the pasuk says, quoting again from the supplemental reading this week, Zachar is asher asalacha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you? When you came out of Egypt, And the Torah says, what did Amalek do? So Amalek went ahead and attacked from the rear. So Amalek attacked all of the stragglers in the back of the camp. And you were tired, right? You were tired and you were worn out and you didn't. Interesting, it means you didn't fear God. It doesn't mean the Jewish people didn't fear God. Amalek didn't fear God. Okay, so that's the discussion exactly who it is that didn't fear God. Rabbi Osei, just to understand. So now we have a mitzvah. We have a mitzvah. A mitzvah daraisa, a biblical obligation to remember that which Amalek did to us. That's our obligation. Rabbi Osei, so you have to appreciate this for just a moment. Generally, right, we have Kriyas HaTorah Mondays, Thursdays, Shabbos morning, Shabbos mincha. Kriyas HaTorah as a whole is a drabanon, is a rabbinic mitzvah. There's only one time throughout the entire year that there's a mitzvah da'araisa of Kriyas HaTorah, a biblical mitzvah, and that is Parsha Zachar. Parsha Zachar, there's a biblical obligation to go ahead and read the section of Amalek. That's why, again, even in Shul on Shabbos, you know, both in a general Shabbos, a person comes late to Shul and they miss laning. And they miss Leni, Rachmana Litzlan, Lo Aleinu, right? Who could ever imagine such a thing like that? But if it does happen, right, do you repeat Kriyas HaTorah for such a person? No. But yet, by Parsha Zachar, right, if you miss, right, we have it. We have a second reading, a third reading, a whole bunch of readings. Why? Because the reading itself is a biblical obligation. The Shaila is, why? Chesh Baruch Hu tells us, remember what Amalek did to you. Well, why? In other words, what is the nature of this obligation to remember? So we'll say, so think about this just a moment. So if I were to ask you, why do you have to remember? What would you say? What's the point of the remembrance? So let's think about this. What is it? To remember that people hate us? So we'll say, do we need a reminder that people hate us? We'll say, you know, isn't it amazing to see, you know, when we're following the news and we're watching the developments in the Middle East with Iran and the United States, how fascinating it is to see that, you know, Iran says that if the United States attacks, what are they going to do? They're going to bomb Israel. What? I don't understand, like, what does that do with us? What does that do with us? We'll say, because it always has to do with us. It always has to do with us, right? They will say, you know, you see, I'm sure, you know, many of you saw, I don't know if anyone saw that, or parts of the, you know, the interview between Tucker Carlson and Ambassador Huckabee. They will say, you know, like just the rabid anti-Semitism that exists, that has a platform, that has millions upon millions of viewers, right? This institutionalized almost form of rabid anti-Semitism is, so what we need to read, and we'll come back to Tucker Carlson and Yimach Shemo V'Zichro in just a second, right? But we need to read Parsha Zachar in order to be reminded that people hate us. That's what it's Hashem telling us. Remember that there's an Amalek out there. Remember there are people that want to obliterate you. Remember there are people who want to kill you. We don't need a reminder. We do not need a reminder at all. All we need to do is open the newspaper, read the news, open our eyes, and even if we have been spared from, you know, day-to-day contact with this type of behavior, we're certainly not surprised, or we're not ignorant to what is happening all around us. So what is the pshat? So what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to convey to us by giving us a biblical obligation to remember that which Amalek did to us? So what the Rebbe says, paragraph A. She says, Nira, listen to this. Dine, lo zu bilvad, de zera Yisrael, he metzuvim amechias Amalek, du zera Esav. So Rebbe says, so again, you know, there is a mitzvah of mechias Amalek. There is a mitzvah to physically destroy, to physically annihilate Amalek. And I will say, it is important to recognize that for many of us, it is a troubling mitzvah. Right, this was one of the exchanges in this interview between Tucker Carlson and Huckabee. Right, you remember, if you watched part of it, I didn't watch it, I just saw parts of it. He referenced the idea that in the aftermath of October 7th, so Netanyahu called the Palestinians Amalek. Amalek. He said, really? What do you have to do? And, okay, so Tucker Carlson, I guess, knows a little bit of Chumash. You know, so he says, well, you know, what does the Torah say? What does the Bible say about Amalek? You have to wipe them out. Who do you have to wipe out? Men, women, and children. You wipe out everyone. You wipe out everyone with Amalek. So he said, that's called genocide. That's called genocide. So Rabbi says, so first of all, how do we answer that? So first of all, understand what's right and what's wrong is not that metric or that standard is not created or judged by us. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu says do it, then it's right. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu says don't do it, then it's wrong. We are our moral compass, right? If we relied on our own personal moral compass for things, people have done horrible, horrible things in the name of some greater good throughout the ages. We rely on our Kadosh Baruch Hu ultimately again to create our system of good and our system of evil. And if he tells us to do it, it's good. And if he tells us not to do it, then it's evil. How do we reconcile certain things that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us with our own sensitivities? It's a shaila. It's a shaila. It absolutely is a shaila. Yet Rabbi says, I'll tell you something amazing. What happens if an Amalekite wants to convert? What's the halacha? What's the halacha? The halacha is he can. Right? The halacha is even, which tells you something absolutely amazing, which tells you that the obligation to annihilate an Amalekite is when he remains an Amalekite. Because someone from Amalek is bent on the destruction of the Jewish people, and someone from who identifies with Amalek ultimately is evil incarnate in this world. Yeah, so such a person and such a unit you have to wipe out. But the moment that a person is willing to go ahead and renounce and walk away from his Amalekiteness, right, then there's no obligation of wiping such a person out. No obligation.
But isn't there reason to suspect that Amalekite, because maybe he wants to enter into our camp in order to render harm to us?
Yeah, if you start suspecting people for ulterior motives that they may or may not have, it is impossible to ever interact with people.
Even
if it's Amalek, sometimes in life the only way to operate, the only way to navigate is to take a person at their word. Even the Amalekite, right? If he comes along and he's, however we judge the sincerity of an Amalekite, but we ultimately again accept him. We accept them. And again, not even about, I want to point out, it's not even about conversion. Is that if you have an Amalekite who renounces that status, becomes a Ben Noach, you don't have to become Jewish. Remember, again, we'll say, we always speak about this. Jews haven't cornered the market on God. All of humanity is the Chodesh Baruch Hu's children. And if you go ahead and you observe the 7 Noahide laws, you have a portion of the world to come, you're good to go. So this idea ultimately, again, but so the Rebbe says over here, but yet, there is an obligation to wipe out Amalek. Whether it sits well with our sensitivities or not, doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us a mitzvah, and that is the mitzvah. But the Rebbe says something amazing. I will say, but first of all, let's bring the question back. So what do we do with this, right? So today, we don't know who Amalek is, right? We don't know who Amalek is. And even if we did know who Amalek is, we're not wiping out anyone. That's not what we do. That's not how we operate now. That halacha is enforced in a different system in a different time. So what do I do with this halacha? Right, so now, come Shabbos, we're going to read Parashat Zachar. We're going to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Amalek attacked us and that we have an obligation to eradicate Amalek. So now, I don't know who Amalek is, and even if I did, the Rambam says, you can't kill Amalek today. You can't. We live amongst the nations of the world. You can't do that today. Okay, so pretty much what you're telling me is that the mitzvah doesn't apply. If the mitzvah doesn't apply, so what am I supposed to do with it? Every mitzvah, so we speak about this all the time. The Torah always has multiple dimensions. But for our purposes, there's what's called the pshat, right? The simple idea. And then there's the pnimius, the inner idea of the mitzvah also. The pshat may apply at certain times and not apply at other times. But the pnimius, the inner part, applies at all times. So what's the pnimius? What's the inner part of this mitzvah? So we'll say, look what the Rebbe says. End of paragraph A. Ella, get ready for this. Ela dechol ish mi Yisrael, sarech limchos chelek ra, paragraph B, hamechuna b'shem Amalek asher tamun b'libo. So Rebbe says something amazing. Every single Jew has Amalek within. Every single Jew has Amalek within. Everyone has some Amalek inside of them. What's that Amalek? That's the ra. That's the negativity. That's the negativity. That's the stuff inside of me, again, that's just not good. That's the stuff inside of me that is corrosive. That's the stuff inside of me that is negative. That's my Amalek. That's my Amalek. And therefore, the Rebbe says, what's the obligation? What does the Torah tell us? What do you do? What do you do with Amalek? What do you do? What do you do? You erase it. You obliterate it. There are certain things, I will say, that exist, that reside inside of us. I will say this, I want to point out, we saw this, by the way, when we were learning Reb Tzaddik, right? Reb Tzaddik said that sometimes we have to realize that so many of the midos we have, right? So sometimes, like when we engage in sinful behavior, it's not as much just an idea of eradicating something, but rather, again, it's rechanneling something, right? Remember, we spoke about this before, that when a person sins, right, very rarely does a person kind of sin lackadaisically. Generally, when you sin, right, you go big, right? In other words, there's kavana, there's zrizos, there's excitement, there's passion, and there's a beauty in that. What's the beauty in that? Is that it shows me that I possess zrizos, and I possess passion, and I possess energy, right? So funny, right? We schlep through life, but yet when it comes time to do an avera, oh baby, right? Let's go, all cylinders. So that's sad, but it's also good. It's good because it shows me that I possess this energy, and then Reb Tzadik says, great, you just need to retool it, you need to rechannel it. What Reb Levi Yitzchak is pointing out is, however, there are some things. There are some midos, there are some behaviors, there are some character traits. There are some things inside of me that are just negative, caustic, and corrosive. And they have to be removed. They have to be removed. Those things that you're not necessarily supposed to rechannel, but you're supposed to remove, that's called amalek. And the Rebbe posits all of us have this amalek inside of us that we need to identify and we need to obliterate. The cholzman, the zera amalek nimsa ba'olam, because as long as amalek exists in the world, paragraph B, as kevan de adam gam hu olam katan, as yesh mitzios la amalek l'koach hara b'chol ha'adam, asher misorer b'chol pam l'hachti es ha'adam. V'yazeh ba hazechira b'torah. So I will say, there's this interesting relationship. Listen to what Rabbi Yisrael says like this. When I allow amalek to exist in the world, when amalek exists in the world, that allows for amalek to exist inside of me. And when amalek exists inside of me, amalek is also able to exist in the world. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, you have to erase amalek. And Rabbi Yitzchak posits that this is a twofold mitzvah. There's external amalek, and there's internal amalek. And here's the beauty. The mitzvah of obliteration of external amalek, that's a timed mitzvah. Sometimes it applies, sometimes it doesn't apply. But the mitzvah to eradicate and to erase inner amalek, that always applies. That always applies. He goes on, Va'al zeh ba hazechira b'torah. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to tell us to do in the Torah. This Rabbi say, Rabbi Yitzchak posits, is the essence of Parshas Zohar. Zohar is asher asa l'cha amalek. Remember what your inner amalek does to you day in and day out. And therefore, what do I need to do? I need to have the courage to identify my inner amalek, and then I have to have the courage to destroy, to annihilate, not to rechannel. Some things you could rechannel, some things you could retool, and other things you just have to stop. You just have to rid yourself of it. The Rebbe goes on, turn the page, page 2, paragraph C. Vihine, paragraph C, vihine. Koach shel zere Yisrael ina ele bapeh. This is very beautiful. So Rebbe says, so now, the obvious question becomes, well, what's the obvious question?
How do you do it?
Rebbe says, by the way, so just, I want to point out something amazing. The first avodah is, what's your amalek? Don't raise your hand. I'm saying what is your amalek? And Rebbe says, all of us have it. We all have that thing that I just know, like, it needs to go. This is not a good part of my life. This is not what I should not have this as part of my existence. It should not be as part of my persona. It needs to go. So what is my amalek? Now that I've identified amalek, now the obligation, of course, is wipe it out. But how do you do that? How do you wipe out? How do you get rid of your internal amalek? So the Rebbe says, listen to this. Everyone knows that the koach of the Jew is bapeh. Is with his mouth. Hakol kol Yaakov, as Yitzchak Avinu said, right? When Yaakov Avinu was masquerading as his older brother, as Esav, and Yitzchak is a little bit confused about who's in front of him. So he says, Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayedayim yidei Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, and the hands are the hands of Esav. And that, Chazal understand that to mean, to highlight the fundamental distinction between Yaakov and Esav. What is that distinction? Yaakov's koach is bapeh, with his mouth. Esav's koach, his strength, is with his hands. So I understand Esav, right? Esav prides himself on physical prowess. on physical prowess, right? That's how Esav dominates. Everything is about physicality. But Yaakov is called. Yaakov is the voice. Where does Yaakov's strength come from? The Torah or the Tefillah? Yaakov's strength comes from his learning and ultimately from his davening. That's where the strength of Yaakov Avinu comes from. So the Rebbe says something so beautiful. He says, what does this mean? Kesha Adam yesh lo koach zeh, o boer tamid libo b'Hashem yisparach. When a person is on fire, I will say, by the way, this I just want to point out, this also links back to the Piagetza. That's the beauty when we learn from different Rebbes, how much beautiful overlap there is. What have we been learning in the Piagetza? Pretty much like for the last couple of months, it's been the same topic, which is, how do you become inspired? How do you become inspired? How do you become excited? How do you become on fire about something? So Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says, the power of Torah and Tefillah is not simply when you say the words, not simply when you go through the motions, but rather, kisha adam yesh lekoach zeh, when a person has this koach, and what? Uboer tamid libo l'Hashem yisparach. And his heart is on fire. His heart is on fire for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as ein shum ra yachol lishlot bo. Then no evil could take hold of him. I will say, if you have Torah and you have tefillah in your life, then you are the most powerful entity which exists in this world. We often look at Torah and tefillah as things we have to do. A yid has to daven 3 times a day, and you have to learn Torah every single day. It's true, it's an obligation, but it's also the very spiritual battery of the Jew. If I have Torah and I have tefillah, and not just regular Torah, not just regular tefillah, but really like passionate Torah and tefillah, then by definition, the Rebbe says, nothing could harm me. Now you always have to qualify terms like that. What does it mean, nothing could harm me? What does that mean, Rabbi Osai? What does that mean? Nothing could harm, really? If I have Torah and Tefillah, nothing bad is ever going to happen to me? What about generations of Jews who had Torah, had Tefillah, but yet, unfortunately, suffered terrible consequences, terrible situations? I think what Rabbi Yitzchak says is like this. If you notice, the Lashon over here is, as ein shum ra yachol lishlot bo. How would you translate the phrase lishlot bo? How do you translate that?
To rule
over him. See, Rabbi Osai, there's no guarantee against bad stuff or difficult stuff happening in life, right? All kinds of things happen in life. What the Rebbe is saying is, but sometimes when bad things happen, difficult things happen, you could lose yourself in the tidal wave of negativity. How do you ensure that you're a strong enough person that no matter what life throws your way, you're able to remain standing? How do you make sure that the Ra is not sholeit be? In other words, I don't have control over whether or not bad things happen, because bad things happen to good people, bad things happen to bad people. But my avod is to make sure that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu throws my way, I will not crumble. I will remain standing. I will remain strong. How do you develop that type of strength? Rabbi Levi Yitzchak says, how? Through Torah and through Tefillah. That's how you develop that. Torah and Tefillah, I will say, and this again, just understand what the Rebbe is describing over here. We'll say, do you know why we daven 3 times a day? Why we learn every single day? Like, lamashal is spiritual exercise. That's what it is, right? You want to work on your muscles, right? You want to get your, you want to get your muscles all over your body. What do you have to do? You can't exercise. You can't exercise, you know, once a week, right? A person really wants to, it has to be every single day. That's how you develop muscle, by constant repetitive activity, day after day after day. That's tefillah. Tefillah is spiritual exercise. Kaviyas itamon Torah, setting aside time Torah, that's spiritual exercise. And when you do that, you build up the muscle. And what does built up spiritual muscle do for you? That when you encounter crisis, which you will inevitably will, you will not crumble. It doesn't mean you won't get hurt. It doesn't mean you don't get battered and bruised. But you will not crumble. Rabbi Osai, the most important thing in life is to possess the strength where you could say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever you throw my way, I got this. Whatever happens, I will not yield. Whatever happens, I will not be brought to my knees. I will not surrender. That's the statement that a yid has to say, but how do you say that? The only way to say that is if you're building up spiritual muscle day after day after day. That's the power of Torah, the power of tefillah. It builds up the muscle. Therefore, the Rabbi goes on and he says, when a person has that spiritual muscle, then no matter what bad thing happens, no matter what difficulty happens, I got this. I got this. I'm good. Again, doesn't mean it's not going to hurt. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to be like, have the wind knocked out of me. But I got this. I can handle this. The Rebbe says, however, ach, kisha'adam yaniach koach zeh, however, if you don't work on developing your spiritual muscle through Torah and through Tefillah, then az miyad ba'yisu merefidim shiraf yudeyim. Miyad v'yavo amalek. So Rebbe say this is incredible. So the Rebbe is teaching us really two things over here. Miyad shara hara imo. So Rebbe say there's really two pieces over here. Number one is to make myself healthy, spiritually healthy enough that Amalek can't attack me. Because remember again, what are we referring to over here? We're referring to not external Amalek, but internal Amalek. Internal Amalek are those things ultimately, again, that are a part of me that I know that I have to get rid of. I have to get rid of. And Rebbe say, who amongst us doesn't have an Amalek? Who amongst us doesn't have a midah, a behavior, a trait, right? Something that that's just, I know it's like objectively negative. There's nothing redeeming about it. There's nothing redeeming about it. There's nothing positive about it. There's nothing good about it. And I've been dealing with it for so many years, and it's just holding me back in every single way. It's my Amalek, and I just need to get rid of it. But how do you summon the strength to get rid of your Amalek? You need spiritual muscle. How do you create spiritual muscle that I posits? Torah and Tefillah. Torah and Tefillah. But again, I will say, as a good Rebbe, the Rebbe says, it's not just any Torah and Tefillah, it's passionate Torah and Tefillah. It's fiery Torah Tefillah. That builds spiritual muscle. And spiritual muscle does two things. Number one, it prevents Amalek from attacking. And when Amalek does attack, it gives you the koach to expel, repel, and destroy. That's what spiritual muscle does. Ach, kisha adam tofes al kopan midas hayira. Lios yoremi panav yisparach milavra misosav. Al kopanem eno bali dechet. When a person builds up his spiritual muscle enough, ultimately again, then what happens? Then he doesn't come to fall into the grips of Amalek. He goes on, V'zeh shakosav atah yefi ageah she'in b'cha koach Yisrael sherofi deyma avodas Hashem. Okay, so we can skip. V'zeh, look at paragraph D. V'zeh shakosav macho timcha. What's the mitzvah of erasing Amalek? So macho timcha milavavcha. Erase from your heart the Amalek which resides within. Shoresh hara. And ultimately, again, allow it to be subjugated underneath the good that you have. Good. The Rebbe goes in on. So we'll say, just a pashut, but yet so profound insight into Parsha Zachar. What are we remembering? We're remembering that we too have an Amalek inside of us. Each of us has it. And our goal is to find the strength, number one, to identify it, and then find the strength to eradicate it. I will say, how often do we walk through life with Amalek standing right by our side? I know what it is. I know that I have to get rid of it. But for whatever the reason, I just don't feel confident enough. I don't feel brave enough. And I just don't take the steps to get rid of my Amalek. If Amalek is your neighbor, that stunts your spiritual growth. I have to develop the strength to get rid of my Amalek. And how do I do that? The Rebbe posits through Torah and through Tefillah. Cultivate ultimately, again, those two forms of strength. And then at the end of the day, ultimately, again, one will be able to identify, repel, and ultimately conquer the Amalek which resides within. Both say overwhelming. But I want to show you that there's an interesting tie into the Megillah. Look at paragraph F. Paragraph F. So the Pasuk says, focusing over here on the Megillah a little bit now. So the Pasuk says, V'cho avdei ha-melech asher b'shar ha-melech kor mishtachavim l'hamad. So it was a very beautiful piece. So the Rebbe says like this, that in the court of Shushan, so what was happening over here? All the servants of the Melech, all the servants of the king, who are in the gate of the king, were bowing down to Haman. Ki kein siva lo ha-melech, because this is what the king commanded, that everybody should bow down. O Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachava. Mordechai would not bow down. He would not bow down. And the pasuk goes on, v'hi ka amram elav yom v'yom, so when you read the psukim straight, the way we often understand the story is what? Haman was elevated to a position of prominence. As a result of that position of prominence, what happened? Everybody had to bow down to Haman. Who is the one person who didn't bow down to Haman? Who didn't bow down? Mordechai. Why didn't Mordechai bow down? Why not? Why not? Why not? The pasuk says it. Why not? Ki hu Yehudi. right? Ultimately, ki yigid lahem asher hu Yehudi. Because again, Mordechai was Jewish. So whatever that means, right? Like the Gemara says that Haman wore some kind of statue around his neck, Avodah Zarah, whatever it might be. But again, the pasuk seems to indicate that Mordechai didn't bow down because he was a Jew. And ultimately, again, it was told to Haman that Mordechai is not bowing down because he was a Jew. Okay, Rav Levi Yitzchak advances such a dramatically novel interpretation of the Megillah. Watch this. Paragraph F. V'chi lo yada Haman shemordechai hu Yehudi. Why does it, in other words, it makes it sound like that Haman didn't know that Mordechai was a Jew, right? In other words, everybody's bowing down. Mordechai's not bowing down. Haman's like, hey, what's up over here? And they told Haman, Mordechai's not bowing down because he's a Jew. So Rav Levi Yitzchak says, Haman knew that Mordechai was a Jew. How did he know that Mordechai was a Jew? Halo chashuv haya etzal melech kidesiv lemala u'mordechai yoshev b'shar melech. Mordechai was chashuv. Mordechai was very important. Remember again, Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin. So although he was not necessarily part of the inner circle of Achashverosh, but he still had noble person status. After all, the pasuk says by Mordechai that Mordechai was sitting in the gate of the king, which means Mordechai had access to the palace. How did Mordechai have access to the palace? Because Mordechai was chashuv. He was a well known Jew. He was well known, and therefore again, right? He was a well known Jew. So because of that, the Rav Levi Yitzchak says, "What do you think? Haman didn't know that Mordechai was Jewish? Of course he knew." He says, "The gam lirsok kitzon ish veish nimtza bevada yada Haman es Mordechai. Haman definitely knew who Mordechai was, or bevada hayyodei she Mordechai Yehudi, and knew that Mordechai was Jewish." Venira, so what's the pshat in the pasuk? Listen to this. Venira dezel perish, v'cho avdi amelech asher b'shar amelech, ki kein tziva lo amelech, kein shekol avodim yishtachavu lo haman. Listen to this. It's not really easy to interpret the pasuk. So the pasuk reads like this. V'cho avdi amelech asher b'shar amelech, kom yishtachavu lo haman. All of the servants of the king, who were in the gates of the king, bowed down to Haman. Why did they bow down to Haman? Ki kein tziva lo hamelech. Because this is what the king commanded. What's the next pasuk? What's the next phrase? Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachave. Mordechai didn't bow down. Why didn't Mordechai bow down? Rabbi Yitzchak posits because the king told him, he didn't have to bow down. Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachave. Mordechai didn't bow down. So the king commanded everyone they had to bow down. But Achashverosh himself tells Mordechai, you don't have to bow. You don't have to bow, which by the way makes a lot of sense. Why? Because it could very well be that in Achashverosh's eyes, before the whole story happens, in Achashverosh's eyes, so Mordechai and Haman are peers. They're equals. So all of the servants of the king have to bow down to Haman. Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh. Mordechai was not obligated to bow down. He wasn't obligated. The king told him, you don't have to bow down. So if that's the case, then why does it have to say later on, ki gid lahem asher hu Yehudi? Then why does it say later on that they told Haman that the reason Mordechai didn't bow down was because he was a Jew? But that's not the reason he didn't bow down. He didn't bow down because the king told him he didn't have to bow down. Why mention that he was a Yehudi? Why mention that he was a Jew? So look what the Rabbi says. Look at paragraph G. Zeo perish chal avdi amelech, korim mishtachal lahaman, ki kein tzivu lo amelech, al chal avdi amelech, va'am Mordechai lo hayat tzivui. So again, the king commanded that all the other servants of the king bow down to Haman, but Mordechai wasn't obligated to bow down. Zeo perish u'mordechai, kilomar al Mordechai lo hayat tzivui shirch v'yishtachaveh, v'nimtza haya l'mordechai teretz, mashalo yishtachaveh lahaman, ki hu lo haya bichlal shar avadav shishtachaveh. So watch this. So again, therefore, when Mordechai was asked, Mordechai, why aren't you bowing? There's a simple answer. Why isn't Mordechai bowing? Why not? King told him he didn't have to. That's it. But watch what Rabbi Yitzchak says. However, rak shemordechai kivein v'amar shalom machmas ze enu mishtachaveh lahaman. So what provoked Haman? Because Mordechai went around and he said, chavra, that's not the reason I'm not bowing down. I'm not bowing down, you know why? Because I'm a Yid. Because I'm a Jew. And a Jew bows only before his God, not before anyone else. That's the pshat. So again, as Mordechai didn't have to bow. But then Mordechai was going around saying, even had the king commanded me to bow, I still would not have bowed. Lo hayatzai, brak amar machmas shu Yehudi, machmas ze eno mishtachave. Because he was a Jew, that's why ultimately, again, he's not bowing down. Vafilu im hayatzivwe gamkin alav, afapikin lo hayat mishtachave lo. Even had the king commanded me to bow, Mordechai says, I still would not have bowed. Vizel, Ki yigid lahem asher hu Yehudi. That's the pshat in the pasuk. Mordechai told him, I'm not bowing. You know why I'm not bowing? Because I'm a yid. Because I'm a Jew. Turn the page 3, paragraph. Sorry, paragraph H. Haratzon bazeh, shemordechai amr lahem, shemachmas zeh, eno mishtach ha'vel lahaman. Lo machmas zeh shelo haya atzivo elav, rak machmas shehu Yehudi. Mordechai was explicit in saying, I'm not bowing down. You know why I'm not bowing down? I'm not bowing down because the king gave me an exemption. I'm bowing down because I am a Yehudi, I am a Jew. So Rabbi said, an overwhelming and profound idea. But what's the pshat? What's the pshat? So again, first of all, why does Mordechai have to say this? Right? Just don't say anything. Don't stir the pot. Leave it alone. And Jews throughout the ages haven't bowed to royalty. Jews throughout the ages haven't bowed to despicable people. Unfortunately, again, that's life in Golos. That's life in the diaspora. So what is it exactly that Mordechai was trying to convey? And I will say, perhaps what Mordechai was saying was like this. Who is Haman? I will say, who's Haman? Haman is a Malik. And what was Mordechai saying? A Yid never bows to a Malik. And I will say, remember again, if we tie this back to the previous verse, what did the Rebbe say? What's Amalek? We're not really so concerned with external Amalek. I'm much more concerned with what?
Internal
Amalek. I will say, the one thing in life you can never yield to is your inner Amalek. You know, I will say, it happens all the time in life where a person says, I know that I have certain deficiencies. I know that I have certain faults, certain this. But I will say, then we do a remarkable thing. What do we do? We're like, but this is who I am. I'm not ready to change it. This is it. Almost as if, like, that's an acceptable thing to say in life. You know, like. Imagine for a moment, right? You're driving down a 7 mile lane at 60 miles an hour, which happens all too often, right? Right. And what happens? You get pulled over by a police officer, and you say, "Police officer, you're speeding." So I'm sorry. This is just how I roll. This is how I drive. You know, I'm sorry. I know what to tell you. Like this is how I drive. I'm sorry. This is what I do. Right? Okay, that's nice. Here's your ticket. Right? Here's your ticket. So I will say, somehow we create this paradigm in which I don't have to change my Amalek, in which I just yield to my Amalek, in which I just bow down to my inner Amalek. This is who I am. And I say with a big smile, I know I have an Amalek. I know, yeah, sure, one day I'll get to it. One day when? I'm not sure. For sure not today. Right? For sure not today. Tomorrow I'm really booked. I got so much going on. I should have an opening, you know, in the next 20 years or so that I'll get to. And like, it's funny and it's cute and it's this. And we bow to our Amalek every single day. We yield to our inner Amalek every single day. We make ourselves like slaves to our Amalek. And meanwhile, the Megillah comes along and says, Mordechai lo yichrev lo yishtachav. Mordechai didn't bow. Do you know why Mordechai didn't bow? Asher hu Yehudi. Because a Jew doesn't have to bow to Amalek. A Jew only does one thing to his Amalek, and that is destroys it. Obliterates it. I don't yield. I don't bow. I'm not nice to my Amalek. I identify my Amalek, and then I rage against it. I fight against it. And that's what Levi Yitzchok is the incredible metaphor. Mordechai had a license not to bow, but that's not the reason he didn't bow. Hadach Hashem says something, not said something. Mordechai didn't bow because a Jew doesn't yield to his Amalek. So we'll say, it turns out Parsha Zohar and the Megillah all teach us the same incredible Yisod. We all walk around life with an inner Amalek. The stuff inside of me that is just really broken. And you can walk around with it, right? And pretend, well, even if we don't pretend that it doesn't exist, we pretend that we're powerless to do anything about it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Zachor is asher asalacha amalek. Remember what your Amalek does to you every single day. When you live with your inner Amalek and you don't rage against it, understand the corrosive effect that it has on you from the inside out. Remember what your Amalek does to you every day. Therefore, find the courage. Machotimcha ezecher Amalek. Remove the inner Amalek from inside of you. And then it comes the Megillah, and the Megillah shows us. You might think it's impossible. Now I'm going to tell you a story of a man who would not bow to his Amalek. And who was that man? Ish Yehudi Ayah B'Shushan Abira Ushmo Mordechai. There was once a Jew, and his name was Mordechai. And he was the bravest Jew of all times, because he refused to bow before his personal Amalek. And Abba said, that becomes the model, that becomes the paradigm. Parsha Zachar gives us the courage to ultimately remember what our inner Amalek is and summon up the strength to fight against it. Purim reminds us, whatever you do, don't bow, don't yield, don't accept your inner Amalek. Rather, find the courage to go to war. Find the courage to do battle. Build up, like our Lady Yitzchak says, build up your spiritual muscle, day in and day out, with Torah and Tefillah. And if you build up that muscle, Ne'ez Hashem, we'll go out to battle, and we'll be successful in that incredible battle. And we'll be Zocha Ne'ez Hashem to truly, once and for all, eradicate our personal Amalek. Osai Shkoyach. Myriv in the main shul. Myriv in the base medrash, sorry.
Yeah. 31 years ago. So I said the same part. I have to look up and see who he quoted.